Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, I don't know how many times I've been up to Canada fishing, recreating, whatever, visiting some friends. You're probably the same. We live in Montana, right? This is the most non-secure border, the longest non-secure border in the world, as a matter of fact, U.S. and Canada. We've liked it that way, but there are some tensions lately, and there are always tensions when it comes to things like trade. You know, advocating for your side, they're advocating for their side. We're going to talk today about our relationship with Canada, the trade, the tourism, the tension, and the ties that bind. We have the Consulate General for Canada's U.S. Mountain West region, Sylvain Fabi, on today here on Voices of Montana. It's a pleasure and an honor to welcome Canada's Consulate General for the U.S. Mountain West region. It's Sylvain Fabi to the program today with much to discuss. Hello, Sylvain. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Tom. I'm good. It's also the middle of my week, but, you know, we kind of keep busy these days, so it's all good.
Oh, I bet. I bet you are busy these days. And I appreciate you coming on. You know, we talk about tariffs and tensions and things like that. There's always been those things that are before us, and we've seemed to work them out an awful lot because we have a real special relationship. I want to start there talking about the value of that relationship as it currently sits. But let's start with what your job is, the Consulate General of Canada. How do we relate that here? Are you an ambassador, so to speak?
Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, I was an ambassador in another country before, but just to put it in perspective, consulate generals do the same kind of work an embassy does, except we do it for a sub-region of a country, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Canada has 12 consulate generals in the United States, the usual cities, L.A., New York, Chicago, Dallas, Miami, Atlanta, Seattle, etc. The Canadian Consulate General for the U.S. Mountain West is based in Denver, and we cover the states of the interests of Canada in the states of Colorado, of course, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Kansas. So we do a couple of different kind of things. I'm sorry. We advocate for Canada's interests, a lot of which we do these days, and we'll get to this. We also support our businesses who want to do business in the territory. We help them meet people, engage, find resources. And also, we provide what we call consular services, meaning if a Canadian lost his or her passport, or is in the hospital, or was arrested by the police, all kinds of things. We support them, provide them with some help on how to navigate their ordeal. So by and large, that's what a consulate general does. I'm the consul general, so I'm the head of mission here in Denver. We have a team of about 20 people. And like you say, we have a lot of work on our plate on a normal day. These days, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. What are the challenges of your job? What's the main thing that you try to accomplish, kind of in a nutshell?
Well, on the business side, it's simple, right? We support them, give them information, give them contacts, etc. What I do more personally is advocating for Canada, trying always to steer clear between involving myself in the internal affairs of the country or the states where I am,
mm-hmm.
but very often, you know, giving Canada's perspective on a particular issue and often suggesting, you know, ways to resolve these issues or improve the situation by providing solutions that, you know, have to be mutually beneficial, not only just for Canada, of course, because that's usually not an argument that goes very far. We try to provide solutions that are mutually beneficial. So challenges is often to provide information where there is some information missing. Most people in the United States love Canada, which, by the way, is the same. Canadians love Americans, but it doesn't mean they know a lot about what our two countries are doing. So The challenge often is to provide information or complete the information that people have and you know, try to advocate for our interests by providing solutions.
Yeah, you know, I could tell you more about the people of Canada than I could about the policies of Canada, so to speak.
Of course, it's normal.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate that we've had this real warm relationship over the years. You know, part of that is geopolitical, right? We are neighbors, but a lot of that has to do with shared values, too, in a lot of ways. Let's talk about that. Before we talk about, obviously, the trade tensions, of course, our president has made some overtures that I don't think a lot of Canadians like in terms of the 51st state. We'll get into that, too. I think there's, you know, many Americans who are probably uncomfortable with that, too. But we understand that there's change and change needed in this country, too. So what's the value of this relationship? Let's go back in history or let's just look at where we're at right now. From your perspective, and it's Sylvain Fabi, Canada's Consulate General for the U.S. Mountain West region. What is this relationship? What's the value of it to both countries?
I'm happy you're asking that question because that's the message, the first message I want to convey to you and your listeners. People have to remember the Canada-U.S., let's start with the trade relationship. We'll touch on other issues after. Canada and the U.S. share the largest economic relationship of any two countries in the world, bar none, right? If we consider the import, export of goods, but also services, investment flows, etc., no two countries share a trade relationship as big. For the U.S., you're very close to Canada is Mexico. It's also a gigantic economic trade relationship. I'm putting this in perspective in the context of some of the measures that were announced by the administration lately. Mm-hmm. We trade about $2.5 billion dollars a day.
Wow.
Right? And a lot of, for example, a lot of people have commented that the U.S. has a trade deficit with Canada. Mathematically, true. But if you look at it, we have, last year we had a $65 billion trade deficit out of about $1 trillion worth of trade. That's 0.6% of 1% of our overall bilateral trade. So it's like a rounding error. And of course, if we remove oil and electricity, you have a surplus. But that's on the trade side. We've also been allied, right? We served in two world wars together. We served more recently. Our men and women served with your people, with your military in Afghanistan, right? Historically, you know, we stand together in NORAD, which defends the North American continent. You have a lot of Canadians working with NORAD or embedded in different kinds of military outfits throughout the U.S. NORAD is based in Colorado Springs, so it's just next door to where I live. We're standing together on this. We fought, you know, like I say, in Normandy, Korea, Afghanistan. And a fact that a lot of people in Montana actually know is the first Special Service Force or the Devil's Brigade, which was an elite American-Canadian commando unit, trained in Helena, Montana.
Yeah.
That's just post-World War II, if I remember correctly. So that's an interesting link, right? We're the best customer for your exports. We buy more goods from the U.S. than the U.K., China, France, and Japan combined. It's the same for Mexico. So you can see we have a huge relationship. But also we have the people-to-people relationship, the cultural links, your music, our music, our hockey, your hockey, baseball, etc. We're friends. Like we're on the same team. You are very important to us. Very. You are by very far our largest trading partner. We are your largest trading partner too, to a lesser extent, right? Like the U.S. depends economically less from Canada than Canada does the U.S. 80% of our exports go to the U.S. So in a nutshell, Tom, these are aspects of our relationship that people should remember. We're big allies, partners, and friends.
Yeah, and I very much appreciate that, too. And I think we do keep that in mind. In fact,
of course.
You know, you're so close that we cannot afford bad relationships with Canada or Mexico or frankly, almost every other country in the globe. But, yeah. You know, there are reasons, though, that we do conflict. And we'll get into those a little bit, too.
Okay.
Maybe we start with your initial response from a government standpoint, but also, you know, get down to a personal level, all right? Because I know, and I've heard from people here, and I haven't heard from my Canadian friends, but I've heard from my friends who have Canadian friends that, you know, they're concerned about it right now. And I'm not so much concerned because I see these things as, I think, for what they are. They're trying to move a ball forward. Once you understand that, all these other aspects of our relationship can remain if we just focus on what the issues are, the trade issues here. And so let's go with what you guys first see, hear, and think from a diplomatic standpoint, but also on that personal level, Sylvain.
Yeah, listen, the measures that are being implemented, some of them very directly targeting Canada, we find a little bit, not a little bit. We think they're completely unjustified. Movements of people at the northern border are minimal. We had a blimp in 2024. It's back to almost nothing because we worked with the United States and internally in Canada to fix whatever happened. And remember that movement of people from the U.S. to Canada is also a big issue, which is never mentioned. It is an issue. Also, drugs. Listen, Canada faces a fentanyl crisis, which is at least as acute as the U.S. Sometimes if we put it on a per capita basis, because we always have to do that because the population and the economic size of our countries, you know, Canada is about 10% of the U.S. economy and population. The fentanyl is an issue for us. Fentanyl as a border, at the border, 1% of the fentanyl seized at U.S. borders last year came from Canada, actually less than 1%. So, yeah, there is. It's not a big issue. And we have a hard time believing that the measures taken really are about that, right? Nevertheless, Canada came up with an extra border plan. I say extra because, wow, it's not like we haven't been working with U.S. American law enforcement authorities in the last 100 years. But we've ramped it up, implemented a plan, $1.3 billion, which for the U.S. would be $10 billion if we take the size of our economies. We bought more helicopters, drones, put more people at the border, named a fentanyl commissioner. We don't call it a czar here. We call it a commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing ball with the U.S. We listened to what the U.S. administration had as concern, and we've implemented things. So, I mean, there are other things happening, such as demeaning our country by calling it the 51st state. People may think it's just a joke, but really, the only thing I reply to this is, how would you feel if another country would do that to you?
Yeah.
and demean your leader? You know, if American people, ordinary citizens, do that, that's one thing. When the leadership of a country does that, whether they mean it or not, it's cause for concern for us. So that's where we are on these issues. Of course, as you know, Canada had to, you know, provide retaliatory measures to because we don't think these issues are justifiable, and we're getting into a tit for tat, whatever we call it, commercial war, which will benefit nobody. Certainly won't benefit Canada, that's for sure. But we don't believe it's going to be good for the U.S. economy either. So we're a little bit at a loss on how to work these issues.
Well, I would say stay patient on this as well. And you know, I got to take a break here, but I'm going to throw this out there. It's not necessarily for a response, but it's not like I think there's some personal things going on here as well, and the Canadian leadership at times has sent some shade Trump's way, especially when Trump was out of office. And so I can understand all that, but we try to keep relationships and that personality thing out of it. Back with Sylvain Fabi. And Sylvain, I appreciate your time here. I will move to at some point here, because I see that you were Canada's chief negotiator for the modernization of the Columbia River Treaty. And that's a big thing on our plate as well.
Of course.
Let's get into the nature of these tariffs. And we can speak to what's behind them to a certain degree. I think it's fair to say, that the U.S., and maybe from Trump's position here, being, quite a successful businessman, he sees that America, being probably the largest consumer economy in the world, has some chips to play with here when it comes to trade. I think there's a broader move behind it to repatriate some of the jobs and to also shore up the U.S. supply chain. So there's, I think, a method to the madness, but let's talk about the madness. How will it impact Canada and the tariffs coming our way? How will they impact the U.S.?
Yeah, well, obviously, like you said earlier, 75 to 80% of our exports go to the United States, right? Mm-hmm. And it's normal because you are one of the richest, probably the richest country in the world, and we share a 5,000-mile border, so it kind of makes sense that a lot of stuff flows both ways, from north to south and south to north. It's a balanced trade, if you look at the figures carefully.
Yeah, you cited earlier. Yes, I appreciate that.
So the impact will be, right now the U.S. has implemented tariffs on steel and aluminum while the overall tariff is on pause. Listen, Canada is the biggest provider of aluminum and steel to the United States, period. So it's just going to cost more to buy steel because you can't produce all the steel that you need to grow your economy. It's that simple. Maybe 15 years from now you will, but right now you can't. And you can't invent steel or aluminum production on the spot. You need some time to do that, and you need the resources, etc., the electricity, which Canada has a lot of. So obviously, building bridges and highways and all sorts of things will hurt the U.S. economy, likely on steel, aluminum, as much as it would hurt the Canadian economy. Now, if you put tariffs on everything, that's another thing. Our biggest export to the U.S. is energy, whether oil or electricity, humongous amount of electricity across the border, east to west, but mainly coming from Quebec with its abundant hydroelectricity resources that help light up cities such as New York and states like Vermont, etc. So these will have impacts whether we want it or not, right? It would be preferable not to have them. That's how Canada sees it. And if there are more focused or precise issues that we have to deal with, we've always played ball with the U.S. We've always worked. And the reason why, 99% of our trade is tariff-free. So it's not like, like our tariffs are blocking in any significant way, or your tariffs, which you hardly have. It's a free trade, and people buy and sell where it makes sense for them to do that. So these tariffs will definitely have an impact. They also have a psychological impact. If you go to Canada today, go to a grocery store, you've never seen so many product of Canada signs everywhere in the country. It has begun to have an impact on and they've been measured by Nielsen analysis, that more Canadian products are being bought in grocery stores and less American products are being bought. You're starting to see some people are upset in Canada and scared. So I can guarantee you will see a very significant reduction in tourism coming from Canada. Two of our airlines have already canceled some flights connections to the U.S. because there's no demand or hardly any demand. So these things have an impact.
Yeah.
And it's sad because
I don't know. I'm not sure that I'm going to go sad because, I feel that there are there's going to be consequences, good and bad. But I think some of these good consequences could, we're probably not going to talk about them a lot. I got to move on here. I know we only have 3 more minutes. I do want to say, though, that Canada has dumped products on the U.S. They've dumped their agricultural products. There's a huge tariff on U.S. products going to Canada. Not only that, but you degrade the value of the grain for financial purposes there as well. The softwood lumber industry in America suffered because Canada was dumping and subsidizing. So, that is economics, right?
Tom, I know we don't have time to talk about this, but, we had, for example, on softwood, different international trade panels disagree with the U.S. position, not just us, right? And I think you're alluding to dairy, that Canada has huge tariffs, but it's because we have a different system that is more producer-oriented, but Canada hardly exports any milk, any dairy products to the U.S., maybe some powder milk or whatever. And we are your second largest export market for dairy. So it's not like it's completely, out of whack. And the grain issue also has been discussed, and there is no such thing as what you're alluding. But, you have an opinion, and I respect it.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, and those are things that are part of our history and part of our past. Yeah. And as we move forward, those things, whether how big they weigh on whatever decision we're looking at, is still up to the people behind it. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah,
I get that.
Thank you for that. I know we have more to go into there, and I just don't have a ton of time. I apologize. Give us, if you would, this Columbia trade, not Columbia trade, but the river treaty. Talk about where that's going to be at here in the next couple of years.
Yeah. As you say, I was the negotiator for a very long time, 6 years or more. We had struck an agreement in principle with the U.S. late last year. The previous administration did not have time to ratify it, and it hasn't been ratified yet. So at one point, it'll be picked up by the current administration, and we'll go from there. We struck a deal that has made happy and unhappy people on both sides of the border because, it's impossible to even just on the Canadian side, I, as a negotiator, some of the issues were hard to reconcile, right? Some people want more and others want less and of water and levels and et cetera. So it's a very, very, very complex.
Hey, Sylvain, we're going to have to leave it there. I got a hard breakup coming here, but we don't have to leave it there permanently. All right, come on back
and let's talk
more about it.
I'm always happy to come in.
Take care, sir, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.